Blog Talk Radio.
Each morning a missionary advertises with neon signs. He tells the native population that civilization is dying. And three educated savages holler from a bamboo tree. That civilization is the thing for me to see.
So bongo, 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 I don't wanna leave the Congo. Oh, no, 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 no. Bingo, bango, bongle, I'm so happy in the jungle I refuse to go. Don't want no bright lights, false teeth, doorbells, landlords, I make it clear
that no matter how they coax him,
I'll stay right here. I look through a magazine the missionary's wife conceals.
Magazine? What happens?
I see how people who are civilized bung you with automobiles.
You know you can get hurt that way, Daniel?
At the movies they have got to pay many coconuts to see.
What do they see, Danny?
Uncivilized pictures that the newsreel takes of me.
So, bongo, 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 he don't wanna leave the Congo. No, 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 no. Bango, bongo, he's so happy in the jungle he refused to go.
Don't want no penthouse, bathtub, streetcars, taxis, noise in my ear.
So no matter how they coax him,
I'll stay right here.
They hurry like savages to get aboard an iron train.
The Kringalingo Hula Humble Express.
And though it's smoky and it's crowded, they're too civilized to complain.
Aloka toho sahi mahena. When they've got 2 weeks vacation, they hurry to vacation ground.
What do they do, Danny?
They swim and they fish, but that's what I do all year round.
So, bongo, 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 I don't wanna leave the Congo. No, 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 no. Bingo, bango, bongo, I'm so happy in the jungle I refuse to go.
Don't want no jailhouse,
shotgun,
fish hooks,
golf club,
I got my spear.
So no matter how they coax him,
I'll stay right here.
They have things like the autumn bomb,
so I think I'll stay where I am.
Civilization, I'll stay right here.
Hello, James. I am not hearing anything, James, but I hope you're hearing me. Hello, James. James Bostick, this is Mike Cutler. I can't hear anything, but the prompt can't.
Okay, let's try this one more time and see. Hopefully somebody can hear me. I don't know. No sound is coming out. And nobody can hear me. I'm not exactly sure what's going on here. I've tried everything. We are connected. Okay, somebody's hearing me. Gary's hearing me. Okay. Let's try this one more time. That's 709. That's right now. Okay. We're going to get this one more time. I apologize for the technical difficulties, guys. Ordinarily, we are on the ball with this sort of thing. But tonight, it didn't work. Mike was calling in on time. I had everything set up on time. 6-3-0-4. I'm going to try and call him again. We're going to place him in the green room. We will be back momentarily. Well, it looks like he's in the green room. Well, needless to say, this is a little on the frustrating side. We're supposed to have our guest tonight is Michael Cutler. He's been overdue for a visit, and he's here, and I can see him on the switchboard, but nobody's hearing anybody. I'm going to try and raise him up here and see if this helps. Michael, can you hear me? Hello, Mike.
He's gracious. Hello, James.
Golly,
can you hear me?
Molly. All right. I don't know exactly what we're going to do here.
James, can you hear me? Hello, James.
That's the number we got. I didn't make any mistakes. He's
Hello,
called,
James.
I've called
can
him.
You,
we still
can
can't hear each other, but you guys can hear me, according to Superstar Gary Ben for tuning in. Hey, Gary, thank you so much.
Can you hear me?
Well, how you guys been? Let's try it one more time. I'm not exactly sure what to do here. I'm going to put him in the green room. We're going to go one more just to see, and I don't know. Gary, Mike, are you there? Holy shit. Daggone it. Okay. I'm kind of at a loss what to do here now. I'm not exactly sure how this is going to work. Well, Mike, apparently they can hear both of us is what I'm getting. But we can't hear each other. I'm not exactly sure how this is going to work. I think the White House is involved with this, Gary. I think Gary Benford says he thinks Biden's involved. I think the White House is involved with this, Mike. I don't know what we're going to do here. I'm going to, if you can hear me, I'm going to hang up on you, and I'm going to call you one more time to see what's going on. Apologies once again. I just got finished talking with our guest, Michael Cutler. Guys, I'm really sorry. I'm not exactly sure what happened here, but we were having trouble not being able to hear each other. I appreciate your patience and your forbearance. He's getting ready to call me back with the Bluetooth. Hopefully things are going to work out a little bit better. As you know, Michael Cutler is a 30-plus year veteran, federal agent with the immigration. Here he is.
Can you hear me?
Yes, Mike, I can hear you. All right, great.
Finally.
Here he is, ladies
Excellent.
And gentlemen. Michael Cutler, as I was just telling you as he called in, is a 30-plus year veteran. He's a federal agent with the Immigration and Naturalization Services. And his experience in terms of the very real, and the argument could be made a lot of times, the existential problem that we have with an invasion on our borders, not just the southern borders, because it's happening everywhere, is extensive. His expertise includes, but was not limited to, immigration, but also drug enforcement, organized crime, immigration fraud, and counterterrorism, as these issues may or may not apply to immigration. And more importantly than any of those things, he's a terrific guy, and he's my friend, and I'm really happy to have him with us. Michael, welcome, finally.
Finally, yes, welcome. Due to technical difficulties beyond our control, I never thought that I would see our country in the situation that we find itself in. I used to go to bed at night thinking that even if I disagreed with the current administration, either party, I don't care about parties, parties are nonsense. George Washington actually warned us about political parties.
Yes.
He really worried that political parties would create all kinds of problems for America and Americans. He was very much opposed to parties. Let me see if I can bring up a quote from George Washington. And this is what he said during his farewell address all the way back September 17th, 1796. I wasn't quite old enough to be there, but anyway. It happened about 10 miles from where I live in Brooklyn, and so it was at Francis Tavern, which, by the way, was the target of a bombing by a Puerto Rican separatist group back in the 50s. It's a historic site. And here's what President Washington said as he was leaving office about the issue of political parties. And as you listen to his words, ask yourself if this man might not have had a crystal ball sitting in front of him. Is George Washington. However, political parties may now and then answer popular ends. They are likely in the course of time and things to become potent engines by which cunning, ambitious, and unprincipled men will be enabled to subvert the power of the people and to usurp for themselves the reins of government, destroying afterwards the very engines which have lifted them to unjust dominion. What do you think of that quote?
Very prescient. You know, that's the thing that bothers me is the people, and you and I have kind of talked around this, people in Washington today imagine themselves to be on an intellectual equal footing with men like Washington and Jefferson and Monroe and Madison, and it makes me sick.
Absolutely. And it's not even about governance any longer. It's not about the interest of the American people any longer. I don't remember president said it, but back in the first half of the last century, some idiotic president said the business of government is business. I thought the business of the government of America was the safety, well-being, and freedom of Americans. But then what do I know? The business of government is business. No, and that's where we are today. All of the decisions that are being made to destroy the middle class, to ride roughshod on all of us, are being made so that corporate entities, individuals who are worth billions of dollars, could amass still more money and amass still more power. And I'm watching Biden. And, you know, I'm a lifelong registered Democrat. It doesn't mean anything. It's just that in New York, if you want to vote in the primaries, you need to be a Democrat. And I have a confession. I can't think of the last time I voted in a primary. Because every time you go into the booth, it's a choice of cancer or a heart attack, it seems.
Right. Yeah.
But the point of the matter is, you would think that the Democrats would be more upset with Biden than even the Republicans. Let's look at history. When Nixon was engaged in Watergate and all that flowed around that, who forced him out of power? Was it the Democrats or the Republicans? It was the Republicans. When George W. Bush screwed up DHS after 9/11, violated the Homeland Security Act, immigration was never supposed to be divided in half between Customs and Border Protection and ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. It was supposed to be an enforcement-only element. And there was not supposed to be other agencies folded into it. Guess what? Mostly it was the Republicans who called them out. You know, I've testified before something like 17 hearings in the House and Senate. Most of the time, I was called by the Republicans. And for most of those hearings, guess who was in the Oval Office? A Republican president by the name of George W. Bush. They called him out. They said that what he did violated the Homeland Security Act. They said that what he did with DHS made it impossible to secure our borders, enforce the laws, or protect the American people. I remember Lamar Smith, at the time chairman of the House Immigration Subcommittee, saying that what Bush was doing was trying to bring two instead of one candle to a blackout. He refused to hire all the agents for which he was provided money. He refused to hire or acquire detention spaces that he was provided with the funds for. And I testified at that hearing back in 2005. Sheila Jackson Lee actually called him out. And by the way, I testified to Sheila at two hearings. First in March of 2002 over the issue of how two of the dead terrorists, including the ringleader, Mohammed Atta, could have been granted authorization to attend flight school 6 months after 9/11. America was united. We were attacked. Thousands were killed. More would die in the following years because of the toxins to which they were exposed. In fact, more have died since 9/11 than died on 9/11. And we saw this appropriately as an existential threat to America and to freedom. And along came the Supreme Court, and they decided Citizens United, which said that unlimited amounts of money could be pumped into political campaigns. And immediately, what happened? Everything went out the window. The hearing stopped. The news media twisted their coverage. Apparently, some very wealthy people and organizations pumped billions of dollars into the system to take down America's borders. I remember testifying at a hearing, perhaps 3 years after 9/11. The hearing was focused on border security. And one of the other witnesses called by the other side from an organization that had a close affiliation to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, I call them the Chamber of Horrors, they had to go vote, the members of Congress. They called a recess, and this other witness came up to me, shook my hand. He said, Mr. Cutler, it's good to meet you. I said, it's good to meet you. You need to stop this nonsense about the need for border security. You could have knocked me over with a feather. I said, excuse me? He said, you know what that border is? I said, yeah, it's our first and last line of defense. He said, no, it's an impediment to my wealth and the wealth of my colleagues. You are costing us a fortune, and you need to shut up. I was thunderstruck.
Wow.
And I said, what about national security? What about public safety? He said, get over it, Mr. Cutler. People die every day of the week. So what? I will tell you, it was fortunate that I was in a hearing room and not in the parking lot. And I was
That's
so
astonishing.
And I said to him, do you know my neighbors died on 9/11? Do you know those ashes from that conflagration at Ground Zero containing their remains, the remains of the people in the buildings, the remains of the people on the airplanes, fluttered down on my neighborhood like snow, like snow. The stench of death is in the air, and you have the brass cojones to tell me that I need to shut up and stop talking about border security? Who the hell do you think you are? And he glared at me. I said, you know what? I have a prayer for you. He said, what's your prayer? I said, I pray to God that if, God forbid, there's another attack, they don't hurt a hair on your head. He said, well, that's a kind statement. I said, the hell it is. I want you alive, alert, and conscious so that you can watch your family being vaporized inches from your ugly face and you can inhale their ashes. And he looked at me and said, would you like to step outside? I said, more than I would like to breathe. And I started taking my jacket off. He threw himself in his chair, and that was the last I heard from him. He's not alone. And with all the talk about Biden corruption and the Democrats standing behind him and corrupt supposed journalists that wouldn't know journalism if it bit them in their genitals are refusing to discuss it honestly. You know, as a federal agent, we were under a strict requirement that if I became aware of corruption, not just Mike Cutler, if any of us did, we were required by law to report serious violations of law of corruption to internal investigations, or we would face prosecution for being accomplices to the crime, which I agree with 100%. There were a couple of times that I found myself in the super uncomfortable position of having to have a meeting with some folks about a couple of issues that happened in my presence. You don't just walk away. You are compelled. You might not like it. It might keep you awake at night, but you are compelled, and it makes sense. You would think that because the stakes are so high and so many people are dying, that the Democrat Party would look at Joe Biden and say, look, fentanyl is pouring across the border more easily than bags of sugar, okay? We have hundreds of thousands of dead people, mostly kids, mostly the next generation of Americans, dying from fentanyl, dying from cocaine, dying from all sorts of dangerous, deadly, supposed pharmaceuticals. I call them poisons, okay? They don't care. In fact, not only don't they care, they are decriminalizing the possession of deadly drugs such as heroin, fentanyl, you name it. They don't care. It's as though they want to see Americans die. I've come to call the Democrat Party the Deathocrat Party, turning criminals loose on the streets so they can raise hell and kill innocent victims. That's fine. In New York, the people who rioted in the wake of the George Floyd death are being given thousands of dollars because they were treated unfairly by the police as they were burning down police stations and firing their weapons and assaulting and killing people on the street. They were the victims. We're living in a backwards, upside-down, inside-out world, and the basically castrated Republican Party is sitting there playing marbles. Why is it that you don't see a single commercial on TV sponsored by anybody other than one commercial I saw 2 days ago warning about fentanyl? I'm no big fan of Robert De Niro, okay? Let's be honest. But the fact that his teenage step-grandson died because of fentanyl is an absolute tragedy. And how did he die? He apparently bought a pill on the street that he thought was a legitimate pharmaceutical. How many more of those do we have to hear? Why are there no commercials saying, hey, if you need a pharmaceutical, go to your doctor, get a prescription, and go to the drugstore? And give examples of how many young people are dead because they trusted somebody on the street and they bought a pill, took the pill, and within seconds were dead. No commercials. They did it with smoking. Very effective. People don't smoke anymore. They did it with seatbelts. Super effective. They've been doing it with drunk driving, texting while driving. Very effective. If we don't catch it today, we'll catch it tomorrow, but we're coming for you, et cetera, et cetera. What happened to fentanyl? What happened to heroin? Why are we legalizing deadly drugs? Now, the other interesting thing is the left that wants to disarm America is providing cars to people whose identities can't be verified. The weapon of choice for terrorists around the entire globe today are not airplanes but motor vehicles.
No.
Go to Washington, D.C. Go to your state capitol. You're going to see all kinds of fancy flower pots or spikes that rise out of the pavement to do what? Stop car bombs and truck bombs, but we have no idea as to the identity of millions of people that have been given driver's licenses. And by the way, if you get a driver's license anywhere in the United States, you're good to go throughout the entire country, although I understand Florida is now rejecting driver's licenses from some states because they've decided intelligently in Florida that they're not properly vetting the people who are getting licenses, finally. But for the most part, I can take my New York driver's license. I can go to Wisconsin. I could go to Nebraska. I could go to Timbuktu, rent a truck, and I'm good to go, which is how the terrorists operated. The 19 hijackers on 9/11 had in the aggregate more than 360 false names or variations of false names. They had multiple driver's licenses so they could cover their tracks as they moved around the country. Now, what's so remarkable to me, the BS Republicans, oh, we're against what's happening on the southern border. Well, I am too. The southern border is a catastrophe. There was a hearing in 2018. I don't know why they don't quote it. It was an open hearing. Peter King was the chairman. It was about how Iran is operating throughout Latin America through Hezbollah, which is a Middle East terrorist organization that they control and fund, and they're moving people and narcotics into the United States, working with human traffickers and the drug cartels, often one and the same, flooding America with drugs and flooding America with sleeper agents. Public information. Why has nobody quoted that hearing back in 2018? It's happening right now. I can tell you that from reliable sources. Not a peep. Oh, we're going to control the southern border. Really? How about the northern border? In fact, the Justice Department just announced that they prosecuted some people bringing in fentanyl from the Canadian border. There was a hearing held by Homeland Security talking about how over a million aliens have entered the United States across the northern border as well as our coastline, which is something that I've been railing about forever. But they're ignoring the fact that every year we admit tens of millions of aliens through international airports, and we have no clue as to who they are or where they are. And in fact, Judicial Watch just quoted a study, and this is remarkable. Let me see if I could find it. Well, I don't have it in front of me. But the upshot was that close to 900,000 aliens who entered the United States last year disappeared into the woodwork. 800 and some odd thousand aliens entered through international airports and went poof into the night. Are they not as much a threat as aliens who enter the United States by crossing the Rio Grande? And so the governor of Texas has put up barricades, right? He's put up these buoys. And the Biden administration has come up with some obscure law, the Rivers and Harbors Act, that they claim he's violating, saying, oh, this isn't in the best interest of America to put up those buoys. Well, really? So how is it in the best interest of America that most recent estimates indicate that we have 7 million illegal aliens in the United States whose identities are unknown and unknowable, and they've been dispersed clear across America?
Well, and not only that, million. Mike, it's like, I think it's close to, I'm just ballparking this, I think it's close to 85,000, 88,000 kids that the government has released into the interior of the country, and nobody knows where the hell they're at. Nobody has a clue.
No. And there's been Border Patrol agents making the point that I've been making, that essentially the Biden administration has become the most prolific human trafficking organization in the history of the United States. The administration itself working in cahoots with the traffickers. And it started with Obama. I remember doing an interview with Fox News about what they were doing is if unaccompanied minors showed up on the border,
right,
they had Border Patrol agents delivering them to their illegal alien families anywhere they were in the United States. Stop and let that sink in. What I used to do as an immigration agent, that I rotated through every squad within the investigations branch. I was also the first INS agent to be assigned to the Unified Intelligence Division of the Drug Enforcement Administration in New York, the DEA. And after a 4.5-year stint there, I was promoted to senior special agent and assigned to the Organized Crime Drug Enforcement Task Force. So I had desks at the FBI, DEA, ATF. My first fraud case back in 1976 caused me to trip over a terror plot in Israel. We prevented the bombing of an oil refinery. I worked closely with the Israelis. And before somebody starts jumping up and down and saying, well, selective enforcement, I worked with the Israelis, by the way, several years later. I worked very closely with them for 25 years. And let me tell you, I've worked with foreign governments. I worked with the Brits. I worked with the Canadians. I arrested an individual wanted for murder in England. I was the case agent, and we worked in conjunction with New Scotland Yard and the FBI, but I physically tackled this character, cuffed him, and he wound up sitting in the back seat of the government car, and he just had, you know, verbal vomit. He wouldn't stop, and he explained how the whole murder took place of a shopkeeper. It was amazing. I mean, he was so revved up, it was like he needed to get it off his chest, that I remember sitting in the back of the car with this individual, originally from the Caribbean, who had immigrated to England, how he and his buddies were going to rob a shop, and one of his friends got overexcited and stabbed the shopkeeper in the heart with a knife. And this guy went into every possible detail. But when I worked with the Israelis, and they never said no to me, other governments would say, well, we can't give you this, but we can give you. If I called up the Israelis, they actually, on occasion, if we were working, let's say, a major organized crime case involving Israeli nationals, would fly a diplomatic pouch to New York within 48 hours with a dossier on that individual. So we had everything. I could post lookouts, as we called them, at both Ben-Gurion and Lod airports. Those are international airports in Israel. I would get a call at 4 o'clock in the morning. Mr. Cutler, your guy just landed. We've got the seating plan of the airplane. I could tell you who was sitting next to him. We have a copy of the ticket, so we know how it was purchased. Do you want us to follow him? I can't tell you how many times I got calls like that. And if I asked for a dossier, we got the dossier. No holds barred. All they needed was even an administrative subpoena. No big deal. Just give us some paper so we can justify helping you. Well, we did a wiretap on Israeli drug traffickers here in New York. Israel sent us a half dozen of their detectives who sat on that wire shoulder to shoulder with myself and DEA agents, because nobody would have understood the slang Hebrew that the Israeli drug traffickers were using, but certainly their detectives, who were experts in narcotics investigations back in Israel, they understood it perfectly. They were here for something like 8 months, helping us on every wiretap. They spared no effort and no expense. We would actually be able to send people home if they were wanted in Israel for crimes on an El Al jet. Normally, we'd have to send them back on an American airliner, and we would have to send agents over. No, the Israelis would actually pay for the deportation of their citizens, and we didn't need to send anyone to Israel. They saved us hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean, if you want to talk about an ally, I have 25 years of day-to-day experience. And one of the people that Israel was looking for was this young man who was suffering roid rage. And we arrested him. We needed not two sets of cuffs, but three sets of cuffs, because his shoulders were close to 60 inches. He had a 26-inch neck. This guy was eating steroids like you or I would eat jelly beans. Okay? And who did he kill, by the way? A prostitute who happened to have been a Palestinian woman. It took me months to find them, but we eventually found this fugitive. If you watch the movie The Fugitive, you know, he didn't jump off a waterfall. But let me tell you, We had to do quite a bit of digging. We got him. He fought his deportation because he knew he was going to stand trial. I got a newspaper clipping from the Israelis afterwards. He was found guilty and sentenced to, I don't know how many decades behind bars for a vicious murder of a Palestinian prostitute. It's not about race or religion, James. It's about you're a criminal. You killed someone. You need to pay a price for that. It's very simple, except in America today. We've turned everything upside down. And if you look at the problems that Israel's having trying to deal with Biden the way they did with Obama, it sickens me, not just because, I'm Jewish. Let's be honest. My dad and mom used to believe that if Israel had existed during the Holocaust, there probably wouldn't have been a Holocaust. I was named for my mother's mother. She couldn't get out of Poland during the Holocaust. She was killed. But my mother came here as a 13-year-old, legally, I might add, lived by herself in a rooming house and supported herself at the ripe old age of 13 in a country where she couldn't speak the language, working in a sweatshop making umbrellas for $3 a week. You know, that's my family background. And I'm proud of the fact that I was able to help all of these law enforcement agencies from other countries. I got a police medal from the government of Japan. It's not about Latinos. But I took particular pride in being able to help the Jewish state. I'm not going to lie to you. Yes, I did. But it was fair and even-handed, and the proof of it is, guess who we arrested and guess who went to jail? An Israeli who killed a Palestinian. That's what justice looks like. It's supposed to be blind about everything and anything other than the facts. Am I right or wrong, James?
It should never – yeah, you're absolutely right, Michael. It's not about race. It's not about ethnicity.
No.
It's not about religion. It is about behavior. It is about criminal
and law.
Behavior.
Yes.
And those people that engage in it.
And protecting innocent people, right?
Right.
And so here's what no one is asking. With all the money that you're hearing about with Joe Biden, why is no one asking, are they also buying protection? Now, I'm not saying they are. I'm just – asking a question. What was the old commercial, inquiring minds want to know? Well, this inquiring mind wants to know. And no one has asked the question, could it be the reason that the Biden administration has dismantled immigration enforcement, border security, every element that's supposed to protect us, dismantled in clear violation of Title 8, United States Code, Section 1324, and I'm going to read the statute shortly, but just to let you know, cross anybody's mind, if you look at what's happening, if you look at the human trafficking, if you look at the children who are being trafficked, if you look at the flood of narcotics coming into the United States, could it not be possible that some of the money is buying protection? The way that you have a corrupt cop tells the mob, you give me enough money, I'll let you know before they raid the hooker houses or the gambling joints or the opium dens, right?
Yeah.
You're going to pay for that, and I'll take care of you, right? No one's raised that issue. So I'm looking at a wide-open border that's killing Americans and may ultimately destroy America. And if you want to look at the Constitution, well, why don't we look at the Constitution? Why don't we look at Article 4, Section 4, specifically, that says that the states are to be provided with a Republican form of government and protected against invasion and domestic violence? If this doesn't qualify as an invasion, I'm throwing my dictionary out the window. 7 million people who've come into this country, and we have no clue as to who the hell they are. And I was listening to Jessica Tarnow and all these other talking heads on TV, and you know what? I got to be honest with you. It fries my tail. I've done thousands of TV interviews on all the networks. They don't want to hear from immigration agents anymore because God only knows we know the truth. They don't want you to have the truth. I feel like Jack Nicholson and A Few Good Men. Oh, well, now Jessica says at least the Biden administration is having them fill out forms, so now we know who they are. Really? You don't think they might lie about their backgrounds or their names or their – you don't think so? The 9/11 commission to which I provided testimony made it clear that the primary method of entry and embedding for the terrorists was immigration fraud. The first time I testified at a hearing – was 4.5 years before the attacks of 9/11, May 20th, 1997, and the topic of the hearing was visa fraud and immigration benefit fraud because of two terror attacks carried out in the United States in 1993. First, the shooting at the CIA by a Pakistani by the name of Kansi, who had applied for political asylum, filed a motor vehicle, And then the bombing of the Trade Center, which involved a truck that was rented by an illegal alien and driven by an illegal alien, all from the Middle East, and all committed one form or another or multiple forms of immigration fraud, lying about their identities, lying about their backgrounds, and lying about their connections to terrorist organizations, even lying about their nationalities. Okay? So you have Jessica Tarnow sitting there saying, well, because of Biden, we now know who's coming in. Lady, you're an idiot. She needs help breathing. If she holds her breath for 5 seconds, she'll forget how and probably die. This is as dumb as it gets. Now we'll know? Really? No, you won't know. And the only thing worse than no security is false security. So let me give you my most recent example of this one. Now, here is a Justice Department press release. You're going to love this, boys and girls. If you have trouble sleeping, you don't want to hear the story. Because you know what? I don't sleep at night very well. And as I told Jim Sensenbrenner when he was chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, I said, Mr. Chairman, if I can't sleep at night, sure as hell, I don't want you to be able to sleep at night. And he said to me, Mr. Cutler, are we talking about national security? I said, well, I'm sure as hell not going to discuss my sex life with you. And everybody laughed, including Sensenbrenner, because Sensenbrenner foolishly was supporting George W. Bush's guest worker amnesty program, as I came to call it. And I said, what would prevent a terrorist like Osama bin Laden, because this was just 2 years after 9/11, from coming to the United States, taking a shave, getting rid of his, you know, Freddie Flintstone desert getup, and either put on sweats and blue jeans or an Armani suit, put in contact lenses to change his eye collar, and put lifts in his shoes to make him appear 2 inches taller, and claim to be Donald Duck? I said, within 48 hours, Osama bin Laden could get official documentation, including Social Security cards, driver's licenses, and credit cards, in the name of Donald Duck. So he would have access to cars, airplanes, corporate and government office buildings. They said, hell, Mr. Chairman, he could walk into your office. And he freaked out. Well, why did he support it? Because his staffers told him it was a good idea. Who were his staffers? These young 26-year-old kids who went to the Ivy League schools and drank the Kool-Aid with not one but two straws, and most of them, frankly, were looking to curry favor and jobs on K Street with the lobbying groups. How do you curry favor? How do you prove your worth? You convince a member of Congress to vote a particular way on a couple of particular pieces of legislation to show your loyalty to that lobbying outfit, and then they will double or triple your paycheck. Most of the people that work in Congress aren't there for a year. It doesn't even pay to know most of their names. And I jokingly said that if you really want renewable energy that is spotless, I mean perfectly clean, sterilized, all you need to do is hook generators onto the revolving doors that connect K Street to Capitol Hill. You'll have enough power to power the entire world. What do you think of that idea?
That's a pretty good one. I like it. That'd be inexhaustible supply.
Yep.
Hey, listen.
And so Sensenbrenner threatened to fire his people. I know because they called me up the next week and said, what happened? Sensenbrenner came in and said, I just spoke to former agent Mike Cutler, and he set me straight. Are you people imbeciles? This program is dangerous. We're going to let terrorists into the country, and a lot of Americans can die, and you told me this was a good idea. And they didn't know what to say to him. So let me read the headline. This press release was on July 14th of this year, 2023. And I have to make an observation, as I did on my internet radio show, my blog talk show. July 14th is also known as Bastille Day. So as evil as America is supposed to be, according to the idiots from the 1619 Project, we, America, inspired the French Revolution to overthrow the tyrants. America inspired the creation of the government of Liberia that modeled itself and even its passports and so forth at one point on America to achieve freedom from tyranny. Evil America, okay? But anyway, on Bastille Day of this year, Justice Department issues a press release. High-level member of ISIS sentenced to life in prison for material support to a foreign terrorist organization resulting in death. And then the subtitle, former Brooklyn and Bronx resident convicted of being an ISIS fighter, weapons smuggler, propagandist, and recruiter. Brooklyn man. Oh, so he was born in Brooklyn, right? Not so fast.
He's from Brooklyn, but that doesn't necessarily mean, yeah.
No, he actually isn't. He actually isn't from Brooklyn. Huh. That's the real kicker to all of this, Julie. You're going to love this. Where is it? Well, anyway, if you look at his indictment, he was born in Kosovo and legally immigrated to the United States. He had a green card. Does that take your breath away? It should.
Yeah.
Because we've seen this time and again. The Tsarnaev brothers, who blew up the Boston Marathon 10 years ago on Patriot Day, were from Russia, and they've been granted political asylum, saying we can never go back to Russia. They will persecute us. They will kill us. And as soon as we gave them asylum, they hopped on airplanes, and where did they go? Back to Russia. And then they came back to the United States and showed their gratitude by blowing up the Boston Marathon and planting an explosive-laden backpack next to a little boy who was dismembered by the blast. Oops. We saw the attack at San Bernardino. Time and time and time again, many of the terrorists have acquired lawful status in the United States, even United States citizenship. Now, I don't always agree with Donald Trump. I'm not part of the I'm not the president of the president's fan club. But I agree with a number of his policies. One of the things that he did is he said, we're going to establish a specific office to go after aliens who acquire U.S. citizenship by lying, because we know the terrorists have done this. In fact, when our special forces took down bin Laden and seized his library and his compound, what did they find? Among other things, a copy of the 9/11 Commission report. They found a copy of an application for U.S. citizenship. And time and again, I've written articles for Front Page about terrorists who've been granted U.S. citizenship. Now, why do they want citizenship? In fact, their handlers overseas tell them, do nothing until you get that U.S. passport. Smile at your neighbors, water your plants, leave the trash at the curb, be a model citizen, do nothing to upset anybody, make everybody love you until you get the passport. Why? Because when you get a U.S. passport, you can hold on to your original passport. You now have two passports. One of the things in our law says that when you become a U.S. citizen, you can change your name, and it doesn't cost extra because people want to sound more American than they might otherwise if they kept their original name, so they're allowed to do that. I don't have a problem with it. But the insane part, and I've raised this issue at hearings in Congress, their U.S. passport does not reflect their original name, only their new name, so they put themselves into their own witness protection program. Okay? And in fact, a buddy of mine who was an inspector at a major international airport called me up, gosh, this had to be 15 years ago, not long after 9/11. He said, Mike, you're on national television. You get to meet with members of Congress. You're going in front of those hearings. You got to do something because I've been having nightmares. I said, what's the problem? He said, I had a guy come through my booth with a U.S. passport. Place of birth, according to the passport, was Beirut, Lebanon. Not hard. There's two ways that can happen. His parents could have been traveling through Lebanon at the time. The mother gives birth. He's a U.S. citizen. He has place of birth, Lebanon. That's where he was born. Or he's a naturalized citizen. He said, this guy did not look like a naturalized citizen. He spoke with a super thick Arabic accent. He had Arabic appearance about him, you know, dark, swarthy complexion, curly, dark hair, et cetera, et cetera. And he said the fact that his English language ability was really poor was a tip-off. So we asked this guy, his name, you know, my top secret clearance by that point had expired, and I didn't really have a need to know. He said, so I'm not going to tell you what the names were, but let's say the name on the U.S. passport is Robert Anderson, because that's an Anglo-sounding name. And when he ran Robert Anderson through the computer at the port of entry, everything was fine, no problem. Boom, everything's cool. But he was digging because he looked at this guy and he looked at the passport. And in 4 years since he got the passport, this guy has been all over the world, Middle East, Latin America, and Europe. And he said, this guy's doing an awful lot of traveling. Who the hell is this guy? And he said to the guy very nonchalantly, by the way, what was your name before you naturalized? Muhammad whoever. So he punched in Muhammad whoever. Turned out he was a wanted international terrorist. And for 4 years, he traveled around the world. under the name that he made up for himself. We allowed him to create his own witness protection program, if you will.
Right.
The FBI came running. They picked him up. They arrested him. God only knows what damage he did while he traveled through Latin America, the Middle East, and Europe as Robert Anderson. So what Trump said is, we're going to make sure that if you lie to get citizenship, we're going to identify you, we're going to prosecute you, and we're going to strip you of your citizenship. He's right. It's a national security threat, an immediate threat. We saw the same game played by the Nazi war criminals, except they weren't coming here to blow us up. They were coming to flee justice, which they so richly deserved for being part of the Holocaust, okay? By the way, if you want to watch a good movie, watch The Bridge of Spies, you can see that immigration even played a role in Francis Gary Powers being swapped for Rudolph Abel. And in fact, one of my bosses that I worked with, his partner was the immigration case agent who worked with the FBI, but of course immigration is never mentioned as an agency in the movie, but it's an excellent movie with Tom Hanks. They recommend it. But immigration figures prominently in all of these cases, okay? And so Trump said, we're going to go after these people, just the way we went after the Nazi war criminals for concealing their involvement with the Holocaust. Along comes Mr. Mayorkas, and what does he say? We're not going to do that to you. You're an American citizen. We will put 100% of the weight of the U.S. government behind you and protect and shield you from everything and anything because you deserve protection as an American. Of course, that doesn't apply to Americans born in America, only to people who lie to get U.S. citizenship. This is, as far as I'm concerned, Mayorkas and everything we're seeing is a massive criminal operation that is destroying the United States and sowing the seeds for the next terrorist attack. I pray to God I'm wrong, but that's what I see. Okay? We hear all this business about, we got to get the guns, we got to get the guns, right? We need gun control. Nearly as many people die because of car accidents as because of firearm incidents. Have you ever heard of anyone calling for car control? And when there is a bad accident, what's the first thing you hear about in the report? The driver was drunk. And
you get a toxicology report. Yeah.
That's right. When was the last time you saw a toxicology report on a mass shooting?
Never.
Right.
They allude to it. You know, they'll say they're on certain psychotropic medicines or they were taking this or that. But to what was in their system when they went and committed those murders, we never know.
And there's been studies done that say that young men in particular, when they start using pot today because of the enhanced levels of THC and so forth, wind up with permanent mental illness. And we keep hearing how mental illness and firearms are an issue. Policies on drugs is creating a huge mental illness crisis throughout America with the next generation of Americans, which is giving them, they think, justification to disarm all Americans, which seems to be the goal. So we're going to let terrorists have access to motor vehicles, which they need to carry out attacks. But Americans who want to defend themselves are SOL, out of luck, right?
Yeah.
Think about that. And so I look at all this. I look about the drug money. I look at China. And by the way, Fox News broke a story today that I found interesting, that a lot of the retail shoplifting is now being done by the Mexican drug cartels throughout the United States. And they're laundering the money through China. Let all this sink in, folks. And I remind you again, I'm a lifelong registered Democrat. And then I think about Bobby Kennedy Jr. trying to testify before an oversight hearing, and how the Democrats did everything they could to shut him up.
On censorship. A hearing on censorship, and they're trying to censor the damn guy.
Yes, and he's a Democrat, and the name Kennedy, you associate with Kamala. It was John F. Kennedy who convinced me to get involved with public speaking. I was so enthralled by his talent, and I really had a nasty go-around with Teddy Kennedy. I had no use for Edward Kennedy. He was another piece of work, but that isn't the issue. The Kennedy family is synonymous with the Democrat Party, and then the Democrats wanted to eviscerate him. How dare you come and testify before the U.S. Congress? And they challenged him because he talked about, and I said this too, by the way, because everything that goes wrong today is because of racism. And there were complaints that more blacks were dying because of COVID than any other group. And I had a discussion with several people, and I said, I'm not sure where they're getting the statistics, and, you know, figures don't lie, but liars can figure. But my concern is, could there not be a genetic element to all of this? I don't know too many white people getting sickle cell anemia, but blacks do. Ashkenazi Jews tend to get another genetic disease called Tay-Sachs disease. In fact, if you're Jewish and the woman is pregnant, it's recommended that she be tested for Tay-Sachs, because that's a particular disease that almost invariably involves European Jews, Eastern European Jews, that we call Ashkenazi Jews. I'm one of them. Okay? So we know that genetics can play a role in how people deal with illness, who gets sick, who doesn't get sick, who gets sick more severely. And that was one of the first questions I raised. Could there be a genetic element? Well, it turns out that the National Institutes of Health found that Ashkenazi Jews and Asian people were less susceptible to COVID than other groups. And he had mentioned it. He has issues with vaccine. I don't, but he's entitled to have it. This is America, okay? This is America. You're entitled to be pro-choice or to be against abortion. That's what democracy looks and smells like. We as Americans have an absolute right, unless you're calling for standing up with a rifle and killing people or yelling the equivalent of fire in a theater that's not burning, you're free to express your thoughts and your visions without fear. I'm a liberal. I raised my children to be liberal. The Democrats are not liberals. I don't know why anyone is calling them liberals. They're anything but. They are the antithesis of liberal. Liberals celebrate the First Amendment. Liberals believe the First Amendment is sacrosanct, and it goes back to that famous saying, I disagree with what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. Does that sound like today's Democrat Party?
No, you better agree with me or I'm going to kill you is what they say now.
Yes, or at the very least, we're going to shut you down the way they did with Kennedy. So the woman asked him about the statement and said, isn't that anti-Semitism? And he said, no, I was quoting an NIH study. And she said, I'm reclaiming my time, and you need to stop talking because I'm going to talk. He said, but you asked me the question. We heard the answer. I'm going to talk. I don't want to hear what you have to say. We need to go to a closed session. The American people don't need to hear this. He said, didn't you just ask me? I cited an NIH study. No, you didn't. That's a lie, and I'm not going to let you finish what you're saying. I was watching the hearing. I almost fell out of my chair. I said, holy smoke. If anybody ever again calls a Democrat a liberal, get your head examined. And what you're doing when you do that is you're giving these jackasses a level of credibility that they are not entitled to. Because there are many people like myself who are old-time liberals, JFK, Harry Truman liberals, and when you say, oh, libertards, well, they're liberal. I'm liberal. They must be like me. They don't read between the lines. They don't pay attention to what's happening. They hear the term liberal. They know that they grew up as liberals as I did, and they immediately presume that anyone attacking them is the problem. People are not liberals. They are fascists, they're totalitarians, and they are authoritarians. They would destroy the First Amendment if you give them half a second to do it. They would destroy our government. In fact, now there's two professors telling Biden, if you don't like what the Supreme Court rules, ignore it. If they come up with a ruling, you can decide for yourself whether or not what's going on is constitutional. Is that how our Constitution works? So the executive branch can now issue executive orders that have the weight of law without bothering for legislation. DACA was a good example. You know, Biden went around, Obama went around saying, oh, I can't do that. I don't have the authority. And then he comes up with DACA, Deferred Action Childhood Arrival, and the courts have ruled that basically it was legislation without legislation, right? So the hell with the legislative branch, that's gone, and now we're going to get rid of the Supreme Court also. So if you can't pack the Supreme Court, just ignore it. And what does that leave us with? A dictator sitting in the Oval Office who's drooling on himself. And meanwhile, they talk about Trump being a threat to democracy. We've got to understand what's going on so we can speak intelligently, persuasively to our neighbors. Absolutely less than zero liberal about the Democrat Party. Okay, they are totalitarians. They want to shut you down and control you. They want to put a stranglehold on all of us, and they want to do it in every aspect of our lives, okay? So when you say, oh, those liberals, you're making a big mistake. Because a lot of your neighbors who are traditional liberals, like me, like my kids, because I raised them that way too, you're misleading them into believing that these jackasses are liberal. There's nothing liberal about Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, especially AOC. And you have Democrats that are openly anti-Semitic and opposed to the state of Israel. And I'm going to go back again and tell you that having spent a quarter of a century working with the Israelis, they would bend over backwards and do flips if it helped our law enforcement efforts, even if and especially if it was their citizens who were wanted for crimes in the United States. I do not know of any other country that was as aggressive and enthusiastic about helping U.S. law enforcement as the Israelis. And these folks hate Israel, would love to see its demise along with our demise. It's as though these individuals who are part of the squad are on the side of the Ayatollah in Iran when he says death to America. I don't know any other way of saying this. That's why I now call the Democrat Party the Deathocrat Party, turning criminals loose, allowing a flood of aliens, which, by the way, if you want to look at the environment, and I've made this point before, but I think it's worth repeating because people kind of perk up, there's a serious drought underway in the West. Everybody who's in our country requires, on average, 100 gallons of water per day for sanitary purposes, for cooking and for drinking, 100 gallons of water. If 7 million aliens who should not be here are now here, because of Mr. Biden, that means because of Mr. Biden and his policies, every single day without exception, 700 million gallons of water are being consumed by people who should not be here. Can someone please explain how this is in the best interest of America? There's a teacher shortage, and we're flooding America with foreign children who can't speak, read, or write English, and the Congressional Budget Office did a study about 15 years ago, maybe, no, it was 2006, gosh, it's coming up almost 20 years ago, that said that it costs 20 to 40% more to educate children who can't speak, read, or write English. So flooding millions of alien children into America is supposed to be in our best interest. Can someone explain how that's in our best interest? Everyone should ask about every policy decision by every politician on every level of government. How are your policies in the best interest of the average American? You want to talk about the power grid? Well, guess what? Every person here has to flip on a switch for electricity, for lighting, for their computers, for whatever, so they consume electricity. We don't have enough power, especially as they try to push us more and more into electric vehicles, electric heating systems for houses. Now they want to go after our hot water heaters, okay? It's going to need more electricity, and every day, the 7 million figure is only as of today. That number keeps climbing every single day because of what Biden is doing, and it's not just the southern border, okay? So how is that helping Americans? This is inflationary because everybody who's here requires food and clothing and shelter and transportation and health care, and there's a shortage of pharmaceuticals. But if you walk into the emergency room, they cannot make a distinction about an American versus someone who's here illegally in our country. You walk in with an injury or an illness, next, you know, it's like going to the bakery. You take a number, the next number is the number that gets called. How is that in the best interests of the average American? I could go item by item by item, and each time I'm going to ask the same question. How is this in the best interests of Americans? Not America. Because too often, America means corporate America. So when Donald Trump said America first, I disagree. I do not like America first. Don't get excited, folks. What I want to hear is Americans. Americans first. What do you think of that? Because America first means you buy a product made by a multinational company that slaps a flag on the shrink wrap when it's convenient for marketing purposes, as they manufacture their garbage all over the world. So I want our policy to be a policy of Americans first. Any argument with that, James?
No, none at all. And you know, Well, I was while you were talking there, I was just thinking, and I was dwelling for a moment on what you said about the Democrats being the Deathocrat party. And if you stop and think about it, that's a very prescient description, because either directly or indirectly, it directly, as in the case of abortion on demand up to and after the point of birth, that's a good way, or the genocide that they
By the way, I want to clarify what I said on pro-choice first trimester, or if the woman's life is on the line after that, but it has to be a life or death situation. I'm okay with first trimester, but this late stage abortion, unless the woman is going to die otherwise, to me, that's murder.
And
is that a reasonable position? Am I being reasonable?
Yeah, that's a very reasonable position. It is, you know, when the Supreme Court sent this back, as we'll dwell on this for a minute, but as the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, based on their decisions, what we got to see was probably one of the greatest examples in our lifetime of the Constitution in action. It was a states' rights issue, and what the Supreme Court did is they looked at this again, and they said, no, but the evidence, you know, what the issues and the information we had at that time needed to be reexamined. And upon that reexamination, we find that this is an issue that needs to be settled at the state level. And I think that
the Tenth Amendment of the Constitution.
Exactly. But with the Deathocrat Party, it's either directly or indirectly.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, there's a trail of dead bodies throughout the Democrat Party, just like with every other socialist, communist, authoritarian type of government.
Yep.
It's no different.
Yep. No, dead bodies are speed bumps to them. It's amazing.
The collateral damage going towards their perfect society.
The cost of doing business, right?
Right, exactly. It's they're acceptable to them. They don't care about any of that. And I don't care what the issue is. They'll pretend to care about, but what they care about more than anything else is accumulating power and control.
Yep.
And if they can do that through talking about abortion, if they can do that through talking about how important it is that guys be able to go in women's bathrooms, if they can do that through talking about how important it is for men to win women's beauty contests, or Black Lives Matter, any of those things, they will latch onto that and they will hold that standard higher than anybody, but not for the idea of that, you know, whatever they're fronting for, whatever they're shilling, it's for power.
Yep.
It's for control.
Yep.
They'll use those things.
And it's
together.
About destruction of society, because it's, you know, it's like a demolition. You've got to tear down the old building before you can put up the new building. So you destroy society at its smallest units. And what is the smallest unit? The American family.
Yeah.
Right. And if you look at children.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, no, what I was going to ask you about, and I just got to thinking about this, and you can continue with your thought. Before we've got about 50 minutes. Before this is over, if you wouldn't mind, I was wondering if you might share with the listeners what you and I talked about this weekend when you went to that event in, was it Jersey?
Yeah.
That you were speaking at in Jersey.
One of the tactics, well, let me finish up about the family, because I'll go right to that, but the family's so important. You know, the most important job I've ever had is to be a father. Now, my most important job, I add to that, being a grandfather.
Right.
But, you know, I was on some radio shows. I remember one day one of the hosts asked me what I was proudest of, and I'm sure he was expecting me to talk about some of my cases, and I worked some amazing cases. I don't know if you know this. I actually even protected Alexander Goodenough when he defected from the United States. I was actually sitting with him in a van under the wing of the airplane, and his wife was on board that airplane. And my mission, as it were, was to make sure that the KGB didn't abduct him. How's that for an interesting assignment?
That's pretty tense.
So, it was very tense. It was an interesting couple of nights. So understand, though, I've worked some amazing cases. I was very happy to do it. Many of my colleagues did also. I worked with a bunch of good people for the most part, like every other job, the good, the bad, and the ugly. But the point of the matter is that the host asked me what I was proudest of, and I said it's being a father. You know, my first wife died when our son was 22 months old. and you don't get over it. Anybody who tells you time heals, they're a heel, okay? Time doesn't. It's not the flu. It's an amputation. We learn to accommodate
right.
the loss. And anybody who tells you otherwise is a fool or a liar. But I was scared to death. I used to actually sleep on the floor next to my son's crib. He was 22 months old because I needed to be close to him, and I was terrified that I was going to screw things up. He wound up as a super successful engineer. He's the head of the company that he started out working for. He's done amazing stuff. And my original dream was to be an aerospace engineer. Two of my boys are engineers. My youngest son, who has autism because of early intervention and the amazing work by teachers like you, James, he was on a full scholarship, graduated with honors, and is now working very successfully as a mechanical engineer. I have two other kids. They were all honor students. One of my kids teaches learning disabled children. I'm very proud of my family. But if you look at most successful people, there's at least one parent or one authority figure in their life that kept them on the straight and level. I lost both of my parents to cancer. By the time I was 21, I was on my own. What enabled me to make the right decisions and not go off the rails was the way my parents raised me. And I'll tell you what, I played a game. My dad died when I was 19. I literally carried him off his job. He was dying of lung cancer. He smoked those damn Chesterfields. I can't watch the cigarette commercials, you know, the ones that warn about cigarettes. It strikes way too close to home for me. And he also worked in the Navy shipyards during the Second World War to contribute to the war effort. And his exposure to asbestos there and on the construction sites, we lost him when he was 57 years old. And my mother was already dying of cancer, and she died when I was 21. No brothers, no sisters, no family to speak of. It was me and my dog against the world. And what kept me on the straight and narrow was I decided to play a game, and I still play the game, and I'm not nuts. I know it's not going to happen, unfortunately. But the game I played is that if tomorrow morning there was a knock on the door and I went to the door and my parents would be standing there and they would say to me, God has given us the incredible miracle of getting to spend one more day so we could see how things turned out, that I wouldn't embarrass them or have to make excuses. Because my parents were the most impactful people in my life. My mother had a fourth grade education because of her circumstances coming here as a 13-year-old. But by the time she was in her 20s, she became the chief buyer for a dress company during the Depression that was so successful, her boss became a dollar-a-year man for President Roosevelt, frequently going to the White House to advise him. And he often pointed to my mother in her 20s with a fourth grade education, his chief buyer, for the reason he was so successful. Think of that. If you want to talk about the art of the deal, I think if my mom came up against Donald Trump would have walked away crying. Okay? She knew how to negotiate, and she taught me everything. My dad was an amazing tradesman, and I love tradesmen. Craftsmen, tradesmen, our society depends on them, not the pencil-neck geeks that come up with scams known as bankers and insurance companies. It's the tradesmen who build the roads and the houses and the cars. And the trucks and the airplanes. Without blue-collar America, we live under trees or in caves. True or false?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And, you know, if there was a problem and my pop showed up, I felt like Superman landed. All that was missing was the big red cape. And his buddies were the same way. But it was always about that parent-child relationship. Right. If you watch Jeopardy, so many people come on and they say, oh, I watched it with my grandmother. I watched this program with my father ever since I was six. Right. All you hear about, my parents, my parents, my parents. Right. Doesn't matter if they're black, green, purple, or have yellow stripes. My parents, my grandmother, there was some adult in their life that held it together for them and got them going in the right direction. And now you have these clowns telling parents to stay out of the Board of Education. If you dare go to the Board of Education, you're a terrorist. I was the PA president of my daughter's Parents Association. I guess that would make me a terrorist by today's standard. Okay? They're doing everything they can to drive a wedge between children and their parents, children and their families. And we saw this in East Germany with the Stasi, the secret police. Children would rat out their parents to the secret police. That's what this corrupt bunch of nitwits that I call deathocrats is trying to foist on America, as far as I can tell. What do you think of that analysis?
Spot on. Yeah.
So So I just want to make that point. If you're a parent, the most important job you have is to be that parent. And not your child's best friend until they're adults. Now my kids are my best friends. My youngest son, he and I are super close. We're joined at the hip. But he's 26 years old. He has a very serious career. He's my best friend. When he was 12, especially with the challenges of autism, I promise you, I was not his best friend. What I was even more important. I was his father. Okay?
Right.
And so when you could look at the Democrat Party and what they're doing, it ought to be crystal clear that nothing, absolutely less than nothing that they do seeks to make things better for American families, American citizens, and particularly American children. They're doing their best to screw them up, create psychosis, get them hooked on drugs. This is how you destroy a country. You don't look 2 years down the road. You look two generations down the road. And if we don't turn this around, America will vanish. And waiting in the wings, it's not like, well, the Yankees lost, but the Mets won. No, waiting in the wings, China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea. What could possibly go wrong? Just something to think about. Now, let's turn to the speaking event that I was involved in. And this is really important. I was at war with my agency. And I'm going to mention this first because I saw the tactic up close in a person, and I had to develop survival strategies. The strategy against Mike Cutler, because I saw that there were things going wrong within my agency. When I heard that I had gone to Senator D'Amato, I got the reentry law changed to make it a 20-year maximum felony for criminal aliens. And then I was at war with a couple of my bosses. We had a boss who was completely off the rails. We later found out that he had a brain tumor. He actually wound up threatening to kill me. They never took his firearms away. Think of that one. Want to talk about workplace violence. What they did was at every turn try to frustrate me. When I became a single parent, they would keep me in the office late at night so I couldn't go home to my child. One of the bosses who I helped to protect from being fired because he was incompetent, not a shock, actually called me over and said, "You got to call your son and tell him you're not going to pick him up tonight. I got work for you to do." And under uncontrollable overtime, it was really an abuse of that authority that he had. But what was I going to do? He kept me there at 10 o'clock at night. My son was 3. I called him up. He got on the phone. He was the babysitter. And he started to cry hysterically, "Daddy, I miss you. Can't you come home now?" And he started shrieking. And this boss actually said to me, "Your son has the most incredible lungs I've ever heard. You could hear his screams clear across the building. That was impressive, Mike." And why do you think he said that to me? To try to incite me into doing or saying something that could be used against me. Okay? I broke my ankle chasing an illegal alien in an onion field. A bunch of us fell into an irrigation ditch. My ankle snapped. They ordered me to sit at a desk transcribing tapes and talk to nobody. And I was told by one of my bosses, "All I want to see from you is the back of your head. If you dare turn around, I'll write you up." Why would you do that? Because they were looking to incite me into saying or doing something that would be, in the words of law enforcement, actionable. And they're doing it to Americans across the board. It's the game of bullying and intimidation. And some people, unfortunately, out of frustration, are playing into their hands, and we've got to be super careful. What happened on January 6th was horrible. I do not believe it rose to insurrection. It certainly was a riot, and some of those people do belong in jail. But the way that they've been prosecuted and the way that they're being treated blows my mind. I can't even imagine they would treat terrorists the way they're treating the January 6th rioters. Okay? And nobody is calling what happened at the White House or the burning of the church an insurrection. To me, that was the insurrection. Almost 100 Secret Service officers were injured. And by the way, on January 6th, an unarmed Army veteran, I'm trying to remember her name now, forgive me, was shot to death. She was unarmed, and there was never a grand jury convened to determine whether it was a just shooting. From everything that I've seen and read, it was not a just shooting, okay? But nobody talks about that. But what happened on January 6th, I think, was a lot of pent-up frustration, anger, and hostility over so much that had been going on in this country for decades. We didn't get to where we are because of Joe Biden. We didn't get to where we are because of Barack Obama. Let's be very clear about it. Okay? It started with Richard Nixon opening up China to the world because Pepsi wanted to sell more drinks and GM wanted to sell more cars, and the list goes on. okay? And you saw people bringing in foreign workers to displace Americans, and we were told, oh, they do the work Americans won't do. Yes, Americans are too stupid to do the high-tech jobs and too lazy to do anything physically demanding. Really? You think so? After Sputnik was launched, Eisenhower insisted that American kids would get the best education in the world, especially in math and science, so that we could continue to lead and make democracy safe around the world, freedom safe around the world. Okay? You've had both parties sell out to their campaign contributors, which are nothing more than bribes. So increasingly, the middle class is going the way of the dodo bird. Alan Greenspan actually said to Chuck Schumer April 30th, 2009, that the solution to wage inequality is to make Americans with high-tech educations, these are people with advanced degrees, compete with foreign workers to get rid of their wage premium, and that way you greatly reduce inequality in wages between Americans with skills and those with lesser skills. What does that mean? Let's kill the middle class by importing an army of foreign workers. And by the way, the Republicans don't want cheap labor. They want to cheapen labor, make it less valuable. How do you do that? You bring in an army of third world workers at all levels, including high-tech workers, willing to work under third world conditions for third world wages, and then that becomes the new norm. And that's why the notion of every American being able to buy a house and put two cars in the driveway has gone the way of the dodo bird, okay? Because they've got Americans running up and down escalator that's picking up speed on a daily basis. This is all about corporate desires. And by the way, the Europeans are catching wise to what's been done to them, and they're getting crazy over this also because they realize the way they're being betrayed by the globalists. So there's a lot of pent-up frustration. And so I spoke at this meeting, and it doesn't matter where it was, but because I've heard similar things, not quite as blatant as this. And I said, I started out asking a simple question. Do you think the immigration system is broken? And, of course, every hand went up. Oh, it's broken. I said, no, it's not. You're being conned. This is now a delivery system. It's the immigration delivery system that delivers an unlimited supply of cheap, exploitable labor. And it's not just the illegals. That's bad enough. But it's the high-tech workers, just the way I described it. By the way, Alan Greenspan had the unmitigated chutzpah to refer to middle-class high-tech workers as the privileged elite, and the media wouldn't cover it. And when I discussed this with Bob Goodlatte, the then Republican chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, which oversees immigration, he didn't want to talk about it. And then he finally admitted that his son was somebody who would love to see tens of thousands of brilliant Indian programmers come to America. And that was a real sore spot for me because my late first wife was a brilliant programmer who was a Phi Beta Kappa graduate with an MBA in computer science and was a member of the National Math Honor Society, and the people who worked with her and for her had comparable credentials, and they were all Americans. And here's the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee telling me how great it would be if we could bring thousands and thousands of Indian programmers. And in fact, there was a woman who worked for him at the House Judiciary Committee of Indian ethnicity, and she was always in the picture with him when he was sitting at the dais at the Judiciary Committee. Think about that. So I looked up Bobby Goodlatte's son. Bob Goodlatte's son, his name is Bobby Goodlatte. Go look him up. He got a start with Zuckerberg at Facebook and made millions of dollars through the importation of foreign workers from India. All right? So this is all engineered by both parties, folks. That's what people say, if we could just get rid of the Democrats. No, we really need to vote for individual candidates, and I don't care if they're with the Hopping Kangaroo Party. But again, all of this is leading people to being angry and frustrated. Many people don't realize quite what's wrong, but they know what's right, what's going on, is it right? And they're seeing the damage to their communities. They're seeing the harm being done to the future of their children, and they're angry. And I started out asking, do you think immigration's broken? I explained that it's a delivery system that delivers an unlimited supply of cheap, exploitable labor, foreign tourists, foreign students, clients for the NGOs, and clients for immigration law firms, and you've got immigration lawyers on both sides of the aisle. And I started to discuss that with them. And then I said, when you deal with politicians, no one is your guy. Congressman Schmidlap is not your guy, okay? He might be your guy today, but these people are very fickle. You don't know where he's going to be and on what issue 3 days from now. People that stood shoulder to shoulder with me on the immigration issue, for example, Sheila Jackson Lee, who invited me to two hearings, has gone off the rails. What happened? She went after Bush because Bush was given enough money to hire 2,000 Border Patrol agents, and he cut it to 210. They gave him enough money to hire 800 new ICE agents, and he cut it to 143. They gave him enough money to acquire, I think it was 8,000 detention beds. He cut that number to 1,700 and change. And she says, what are you doing? If we don't enforce the immigration laws, we're going to wind up getting attacked by terrorists again. Amazing. Dianne Feinstein, in 1998, 2 days short of the fifth anniversary of the 93 bombing at the Trade Center, said that we should not be giving visas to aliens who come from countries that sponsor terrorism. We should not be giving training, certainly, to those people in science, technology, biology, because we're teaching them how to make weapons of mass destruction. And then she named specific terrorists who were involved in various attacks who had either been educated in the United States or in England. And she said, we must not allow this to happen. Dianne Feinstein, what happened to her? Her chief of staff spoke with me regularly after 9/11. Many of these members spoke with me regularly. It wasn't just the hearings I did. I was on the phone with them. My wife thought I was nuts. I was running up $600 a month phone bills because back then you didn't have unlimited phones. All right, so every call to Washington I had to pay for. But after seeing my neighbors die and the ashes land on us and looking over at my children, I said, we got to protect them. We've got to protect America. And I made innumerable trips to D.C., and they were right there with me. The major networks had me on as frequently as 25 times a month on national television shows, most frequently MSNBC, believe it or not. Where's MSNBC today on these issues? Think about how the tide has turned. So I said to this audience, no politician is your guy. They're your guy as long as you're walking on a parallel track, but you don't know how long that track is going to remain parallel. Look at politicians the way you look at lawyers. If you go into court, you're not the lawyer's number one priority. You might want to hope that you are, but you're not. Every lawyer's number one priority is to get paid. Every lawyer's number two priority is to make certain that the lawyer on the other side gets paid, because they're going to work together back and forth throughout their careers. They probably will never see you again. If you're lucky, you're priority number three. I said politicians are the same way. And I explained to them how we're being lied to. We got to secure the southern border. We're against illegal immigration. I just gave you an example of somebody who was a legal immigrant who was involved in the death of many people overseas as an ISIS recruiter. He did so much damage. We're fortunate he didn't launch any attacks in the United States. And he was a resident alien. He's not an illegal alien. Everyone says, oh, Mike Cutler's an expert on illegal immigration. I said, no, it's an immigration period. Immigration fraud is huge. The people that conceal their identities and involvements with terrorist or criminal organizations are the fact that they're fugitives, okay? So any way into the country is a vulnerability. And this one guy stood up and said, so what are we supposed to do? I said, well, it starts with arming yourself with the right information, confronting your politicians at town hall meetings and making it clear to them that you understand the issues better than they hoped you did. And he said, no, the solution is that we need to get a hold of our sheriffs and be deputized and take these politicians into custody. And I'm going to be honest, I freaked out. I said, what in the world are you talking about? Number one, they don't have to deputize you. What training do you have? And if you're taking people into custody, who's going to hear the case? Where are you going to arraign them? What laws are you going to allege they violated? Doesn't matter. We're Americans, and we can take them into custody. I'm not even going to go beyond where this went, but it was so disturbing, and I couldn't get a word in edgewise, and one of his friends stood up and started screaming at me, you better not shut my friend up. He has every right to be heard. I said, I didn't shut him up. I'm trying to answer you. You don't have answers. Now, most of the people were aghast in the audience. There were a couple who actually incredibly applauded this, but I would say 95% of the people in the audience were truly upset by what they had heard and seen. But as my son and I left the event, because I stopped talking at that point, I said, it's pointless. And I pointed out that what he was doing was insulting, not to me, but to the people who came out to hear information that the mainstream media would never provide. And what two people kept saying to me as I was walking to my car, you don't understand, Mr. Cutler, these people are frustrated. I don't understand. Are you serious? I've had knee surgery because I got hurt executing arrest and search warrants with the FBI and the New York City Police Department. I spent 30 years of my adult life enforcing these laws. I've made how many trips to Washington? And I lived through 9/11 up close and in person as the ashes landed on me. And you're frustrated? Folks, we need to grow up. We need to understand the tactics that are being used against us by our adversaries, and make no mistake, they are our adversaries. If they were on our side, they'd be concerned about the death of how many American kids because of fentanyl and other drugs. They wouldn't be talking about legalizing drugs. They wouldn't be talking about posting signs telling people how to use illegal, dangerous drugs safely. They wouldn't be distributing Narcan and crack pipes in New York in a vending machine for free. Allies don't do that. Allies would be saying, let me help you with your children. And I got to tell you, when my son needed special services from the Board of Education, and this is over 20 years ago, the Board of Education was not on my side. They were our adversary. They were trying to do everything they could to not have to provide my son with that which he needed. But I don't lose battles, and we got what we needed for him, and the rest is history. But I started out saying to the Board of Education way back when, you have a choice. You could spend some money on my son now, outcome unpredictable, but, you know, that's the only fighting chance he will have.
Right.
Or you could decide, right? Or you could say, well, we're not going to spend any money, and then his quality of life is guaranteed to be terrible. And he will forever and always be a burden to society. I said, but if we're successful, and I know it's an if, his quality of life could be incredible. He could dream the biggest dreams and realize them and become a contributing member of society. I'm not going to get into the specifics of his paycheck, but I got to tell you, he pays quite a bit in income tax now. I guarantee you he's paying more than they had to pay for his education. Right?
Absolutely.
So you would think that the Board of Education would have been our ally trying to work with us. They weren't. And as bad as it was then, it's even worse now because many of those dollars that should be going to helping American children with learning disabilities is now going to English as a second language. So as far as I'm concerned, if you don't give a rat's tail about American children, you're my adversary. You're not my ally. What do you think of that, James?
I think you're exactly right. Yeah, there's no question.
And you're
about
an educator. I know that you must feel the same frustrations that I do.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Well, and
I hope I covered the topic that you wanted about that event.
Oh, yes,
I want everyone
exactly.
to understand that the goal here is to frustrate you the way they did it to me on my job to get you to do or say something stupid so they can come for you and discredit everybody.
And
that's
it's that division. Okay, and that was almost Pavlovian. When you told me about that was the first thing I thought is these guys have been, you know, they've been incensed, they've been talked to and talked at, to they're at this hair trigger, attitude. And as soon as you said something that resonated negatively with them, it was on.
They were off to the races.
Yeah, absolutely. And they don't even know it, that was their programming. Yeah.
Yes, and what I was trying to say to them, and I did say you could be accused of insurrection, and that really triggered it. I mean, at this point, I was expecting to be physically charged. Okay? I'm getting old for this crap. I'm 75. But this guy's motor was running at a fever pitch, and he had just shifted into high gear when I said that. I said, but do you not understand that you are entitled as an American to make a citizen's arrest provided you witness a felony being committed in your presence? What felony are you going to charge this guy with, and where are you going to bring him? They didn't let me even get that word in. By the way, I've got to tell you a funny story, because this really goes back to that point about citizen's arrest. I was in Europe with my late first wife, may she rest in peace, and we were in Amsterdam. I will never forget it. You know, if you've ever been to Amsterdam, it's a beautiful city. They have these amazing canals all over the place and cobblestone streets. It's very picturesque. We also went to Anne Frank House. Anybody who goes to Amsterdam really should go to visit Anne Frank House. You know, the story of the 15-year-old girl who died during the Holocaust. And as I was getting into my car, there's another car parked parallel to me, and we're perpendicular to one of the canals. And as he's getting into the car, he's approached by a uniformed police officer, and he hauls off and belts the cop in the face. I think he broke the officer's nose because blood went everywhere. And at this point, training kicks in. It wasn't even a conscious thought. It was a conditioned response. It's muscle memory. I saw him hit the uniformed cop. It was clear that the guy was a cop. He's in uniform. And there's blood everywhere. And I kicked the guy's legs out from under him, flipped him on his stomach, twisted his arms behind his back, and yelled to the cops, "Someone give me handcuffs." This is in the days when I was working as an agent back in the United States. We had just gotten married. I was in my 30s back then. And to my wife's horror, I had about 8 or 9 cops shove their guns into my face, grab me roughly, throw me up against the side of my car, and frisk me. They wanted to know why the hell I was getting involved in one of their arrests. Okay, picture the scene. And she was really worked up. And now I'm totally disheveled. You know, my shirt's out of my pants and everything is all messed up. And I was being manhandled by about 5 cops. And finally, this one cop said to me, "What the hell are you doing?" I said, "Well, back in the United States, I'm a federal agent." I said, "I was just trying to help you." And he said to me, "Well, you're not allowed to help me." I said, "What about citizen's arrest?" And the guy looked at me, and I handed him my credentials. He looked at my credentials. He said, "Mr. Cutler, that's great. We do have the concept of citizen's arrest here in you know, the Netherlands, but you're not a citizen. You're an alien." Sorry. Oh, it was very funny, and I couldn't stop laughing. My wife didn't talk to me for the better part of that day. And he got on the two on his walkie-talkie, and a captain shows up. And the captain takes me aside. He said to me, "You okay?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Boy, you look kind of disheveled." I said, "Well, compliments of your men." He said, "Well, you know, we didn't know what was going on. The guy we arrested was a dangerous thug." I said, "Well, I know how dangerous he was. I saw him slug your guy. I'm just trying to be helpful." He said, "Do us a favor, make me a promise. While you're here, no matter what you see, don't get in the middle of it because you have no legal authority." I said, "That's fine." And he offered to buy me dinner. He offered to buy me new clothing because I think my shirt had gotten torn in the process. And he handed me his business card. I wish I still had it. And he said, "If you have any further problems, you give me a call. We'll take care of it. We owe you." He said, "Much as you were wrong, I understand what you did." He said, "Probably if I was in the United States and I saw something like that, I would have reacted the way you did." He said, "By the way, my men told me you were very proficient." I said, "Yes, I am. I'm in a squad where I make an average of a dozen arrests a week." He said, "Wow, that's a lot of arrests." So for me, flipping this guy over was kind of like a cowboy, you know, roping a steer. You know what I'm saying? You don't even think about it. But the point that was hammered home is you're an alien. I wasn't offended. I wasn't insulted. And he was right. Language matters, folks. But the biggest thing for you to understand is the tactics being used by our adversaries. They want us to be stupid. You know, when I broke my ankle and they told me that all I could do was, you know, they wanted to see the back of my head, I turned it around. Because what I did was on my lunch hour, I went to the room where they photograph aliens and fingerprint them so they could get green cards and other immigration documents. And I paid for a photograph of the back of my head. And I attached the photo to a note that I handed my boss, who was a complete jackass. And what I wrote was, "Dear Mr. So-and-so, earlier today you described a desire to see the back of my head at all times. But it has occurred to me that there are times of the day and days of the week when we are not together, and therefore you are unable to satisfy this bizarre fetish that you appear to have developed. I hope my photograph gives you great pleasure whenever the urge strikes." I signed my name and put a smiley face next to it. I didn't know it, but the guy suffered from bleeding ulcers, and they ruptured as he saw this thing, and he went crazy. He literally was taken to the hospital in an ambulance. Chalk one up for the good guys. But see, what I did there was to turn his stupidity into a weapon against him. And the weapon? Humor. If I had started screaming at him or pushed him or did anything else, I could have been out of job. I could have been prosecuted. That's what they were hoping for. How much can we push this guy? How many buttons can we push? How angry can we get him so he loses his head? And then we can deal with them the way we want. See, I didn't give them that opportunity. We must not give these nitwits the opportunity. And you do it by being rational, by being rational, by not giving in to the emotion of frustration. And one of the most effective things you can do is you smile at somebody. You might be seething inside, but my mother used to say, never let your enemies see you're angry. Never let them see you sweat. When someone stands there screaming about, we're going to get deputized, or we're going to take these people into custody, how insane does that sound? And how much does that sound like, what are they calling for? Right? Read between the lines. And that's all they're looking for. Whenever they interview somebody on the immigration issue, they interview an alien who has a PhD from Harvard that he's working on cancer research. And the guy that's opposed to illegal immigration winds up sounding like a thug. I don't want to live with them people. And he's the one that's on the radio next to the guy with the PhD who's from another country. They always do that. They're looking for us to sound stupid. And unfortunately, there are people that will do that, not because they're bad, but because they give in to their emotions. As adults, you can't allow your emotions to rule. You've got to suppress them. It's difficult, sometimes almost impossible. But if you understand that that's the game plan for those people that want to destroy the country, then you understand that this is a matter of honor, that I can take it. You can pull out my fingernails. I ain't talking, right? Think about that. You know, I'm a POW, and you're not going to get me to talk now that I'm a POW. Just because you have me frustrated, I'm not going to do or say something that you can use, not only against me, but against all fair-minded Americans who oppose the insanity that you're foisting on us. Please keep that in mind. That is so important. And the facts are truly on our side. I was on a radio show a couple days ago, and someone emailed the host and said, doesn't Mr. Cutler feel bad for people living in poverty who come to America? And by the way, the people that are running the border aren't our enemies. And I hear so much misinformation by hosts. Oh, these people don't even want to be American. How do you know? Did you interview them? Most of the people who enter the United States illegally are desperate. They are hungry. They are scared to live in their home countries. They're living in a disaster. Okay? I don't blame them for wanting to come here. It's our fault that they're here. It's Biden's fault that we've enticed them into coming here and risking their lives and the lives of their children. They're desperate. They're desperate. Make no mistake. When I broke that ankle, by the way, in that onion field in upstate New York, the alien I was chasing was ultimately caught by a different agent. You know, James, he insisted on having that agent bring him over to my car, and I was sitting in the back of my own government car at this point, and my ankle was the size of my shoulder. I had really done a job on it. And you know what? In Spanish, when he came over to the car, he said to me, sir, I am so sorry. I'm sorry I ran. If I didn't run, you wouldn't have gotten hurt. I'm responsible for your pain, and it makes me feel terrible. It's exactly what he said to me. You think he's my enemy? No. It's dangerous letting people in when you don't know their identities, because among them are fugitives and terrorists and cartel members. That's part of the problem. And the sheer numbers are numbers we can't cope with. But to say to me, don't you feel bad? I can't tell you how many times, especially if we arrested teenagers working illegally in the United States, on my way into the office, I'd stop by a kosher deli. Where else would a Jewish kid from Brooklyn go for food? And I'd get them a big,
right,
a big fat roast beef sandwich with a potato knish and a can of soda. And I've seen people inhale those sandwiches. I mean, we're talking big monster club sandwiches that disappear almost like the way a snake unhinges his jaw and swallows the damn thing whole. I had one guy sitting in the car burping all the way back to the office, and he said to me, I've never tasted anything like it. It was like food from heaven was what he said. And you know what? It made me cry. This kid was 16 years old. He was so skinny, he looked like he had stepped out of Auschwitz. You could see the ribs on his shirt. And he said he'd never eaten anything like it. He would never forget the sandwich. The sandwich, something I take for granted every day of the week, something you – to him, a momentous moment in his life that he would never forget. These are desperate people. Be sensible in the way we discuss what's happening, folks. The enemy aren't the illegal aliens. It's our politicians who've incentivized it so that they come here. That's the issue. Don't lose sight of who the bad guy is. if you were that hungry, or if you had children and your kids were emaciated and you couldn't give them food, you tell me what you wouldn't do to try to feed your own children. Right? Get it straight. We go out there and say a lot of stupid things, and then people say to me, oh, these Democrats, these libs, it's all about feelings. Well, of course it's all about feelings. If you got married, did you get married because you put a spreadsheet on your desk to make the decision about whether or not to marry your wife or your husband? No. It's an emotional decision, right? We make lots of emotional decisions. The emotions should be on our side. The fact that there are American kids going to bed hungry at night, that there are American families losing their homes through foreclosure because they've lost their job to a foreign worker, if that doesn't enrage you, if that doesn't send your head into orbit, there's something wrong with you. The emotions are there, but they should be aimed at what's being done to Americans. Americans first. That's why I keep coming back. This BS about America first is nonsense. That's fertilizer. Americans first. How does this impact the average citizen when he or she is trying to pay a mortgage or put food on the table? And Bobby Kennedy was talking about that. He said there is no middle class. No wonder the Democrat Party wants to shut them up. Understand what's happened. Your adversary is not that illegal alien. That person is coming here. There are criminals among them. I've arrested quite a few. I've arrested criminals working in factories who would escape penitentiaries because they'd committed murder. I'm not being naive about this. But the motivation, Kamala Harris is talking, we're going to go to root cause. There's lots of root causes. It's poverty, fear of crime and corruption in their home country. But by that standard, most American cities now would qualify, right? But it's also people who are fugitives and terrorists and cartel members and gangbangers. There's lots of so-called, you know, primary reasons they're coming, root causes. But the illegal alien is coming out of desperation is not my enemy, never has been, never will be. And when you portray it that way, you turn off people who are compassionate. Someone said to me, those compassionate libs. Well, who do you want for a friend, a cold-hearted SOB who isn't compassionate? All of my friends are compassionate, or they're not my friends. I was raised to be compassionate. My dad once asked me, he said, Mike, when you got food in the refrigerator, a car in the driveway with a tank of gas, and a couple of nice suits hanging in the closet, what time is it? I said, what time is it? How do I know that, Dad? He said, well, that's the time that you go knock on your neighbor's door and see if he needs something. You see, that's how I was raised, to be compassionate. But why does compassion not apply to the average American, to our neighbors, of every race, of every religion, of every ethnicity? These aren't black-white issues, and they're not left-right issues. They're right-wrong issues. But when you go out there criticizing people for being bleeding hearts, boy, that's another expression that drives me straight up a wall. And one of my buddies used that expression. I said, are you an idiot? So you're telling me that if you're compassionate, there's something wrong with you. Bleeding heart, libertards. Folks, strike those words from the vernacular. I never want to hear them again. I never want to hear them again. Understand human nature for what it is. What we're lacking in America today is empathy and compassion. The guy that says, we're going to pay people $15 an hour to flip burgers. So I made one other point at this event that I think is worth making in a minute or two that we have to talk. When you go to work, you're actually being paid for two things. There's two elements to why you pay people to work. The first element is you're asking them to give you something that is their most precious commodity, irreplaceable, and you can't get it back. It's time out of your life. And I don't care if you're a neurosurgeon or a school teacher or a federal agent or you flip hamburgers, everyone's time should be worth the same amount of money because everyone has a finite amount of time on this earth. Everyone would rather be with their children, their dog, painting pictures, fishing, whatever their pursuits are, but especially time away from the family, because every job requires that. So everyone's time in my world is equal money. Doesn't matter about your education, it's time away from your son or your daughter and so forth. The difference in pay comes in with your skill set. A neurosurgeon certainly has a very different skill set from the guy that flips hamburgers. So the neurosurgeon gets lots more money. I'm a capitalist. But you have to pay a reasonable amount of money for anybody who works because they're giving up that precious commodity of time. And to look down your nose and say, ah, hamburger flipper. Yeah, but while he's handing you that bag of food at the window, his daughter is doing homework by herself at the kitchen table, wishing that her father was there with her, or her mother was there with her, or her big sister was there with her. Let's be compassionate, folks. Because if you're compassionate, the message will really and truly resonate with your neighbors far better than when you come across and use terms like bleeding heart and libertarian. Name-calling doesn't work. Let's look at the issues. Let's put Americans first. Let's put the survival of America first, because waiting in the wings are adversaries who are truly evil. What do you think of that, James?
I think you're absolutely right. And if we don't make outreach to our neighbors, and that's not
yep.
really that far. I mean, you know, it's not like what you're suggesting is that you know, you go to another community and you start, no, catch the guys, he's coming out and he's going down the street on the way to work. It doesn't take anything more than throwing up a hand and waving, or maybe
yep.
knocking on the door.
Or going to a barbecue, or you bump into
exactly.
somebody in the store
yeah.
and you start chatting.
Exactly. You can do more, and I think you can generate more goodwill, honestly and truly, with
yep.
a hot dog and a beer, and not
yep.
don't even get political, just fellowship a little while.
Yep, and it could start with, look at what's happening with crime right now, and go from that to how we got to this point. And if you're really concerned about justice, why do we have children living in poverty who are so hopeless that they turn to crime and drugs rather than have the optimistic viewpoint that if I can go to school and get an education, I can dream my dreams? That's not what the politicians want them to hear. They need an underclass that they can manipulate. I think it was Lenin who called them the useful idiots.
Yes. Yeah. To advance
right.
the cause and then be done away with because
yes,
they can't
and,
be trusted.
And blame and scapegoat another segment. That's how the Holocaust started. Your life would be wonderful if it weren't for the Jews or it weren't for the gypsies. And look at what we saw with the Dodgers, with the Christians and those clowns and that whole business.
Oh, my
when
God.
People,
yeah.
It enraged me because everyone's entitled to respect. I'm not particularly religious, having suffered the losses I did. I'll be honest. I have a problem believing, and that's just me. But I respect people who are religious, and I don't care what their religion is. Who am I to say what you're supposed to believe in? As long as your belief does not cause you to hurt anybody else, I don't care if you believe that standing on your head and holding your breath is the solution. Good. If you can find comfort in the difficult lives we lead, because everybody suffers in this life one way or the other. This isn't an easy ride. But we need to show mutual respect. Everything has to start with empathy and respect for each other. Then everything else will follow. And you know what's funny? Bobby Kennedy basically said that. No wonder the Democrats are riled. That's the last thing that they want the American people to hear. What do you think of that?
I think you're spot on. And I think, well, and again, you just look at who they were talking. Okay, Robert Francis Kennedy, his father martyred, for lack of a
yep.
better term,
by Sir
just
him,
like
Sir
his
him.
Uncle. Yeah, just like his uncle,
yep.
martyred, both of them.
Yep.
And everybody wants to stay right there with Bobby and John Kennedy, but their dad was the ambassador to the court of St. James. I mean, this is Democrat political royalty. I don't know if there's any bigger name in
yep.
Democrat politics than Kennedy for as long as it has been. But that was then and this is now. And they tried, you know, Debbie Wasserman Schultz tried
oh my
to
God.
Censor a guy testifying about censorship.
Yes. Yes. And she could not have been nasty or more vitriolic.
No, it was terrible. And that's how these hearings go. If they don't have anything or they can't otherwise assail the witness's testimony,
yeah, but I've never
they
been
grandstand.
Asked a question and then shut up. Yeah, but I've done many hearings, but I've never seen it quite that blatant. I mean, this
was
off the charts. This was off the charts.
Criminal.
It's amazing. And in order to tell you who they really are, they are our adversaries as far as I am concerned.
Oh,
I don't
from a cultural and ideological standpoint,
remotely
absolutely.
Pro-American.
Totally. Yeah, totally.
That's when people say, why are you a Democrat? And they say, I am, but they're not. That's my proof.
Exactly.
Folks. That's Exhibit A, the way they treated Bobby Kennedy Jr. That's my point. I'm a Democrat. He's a Democrat. They are not. Stop calling them that they're liberals. They're not liberal. Call them out. They're fascists. They're totalitarians. They're anything but liberal.
We've got 2 minutes. We're down to 2 minute warning, Mike. Tell people where they can find you.
Lost and Found or the Missing Persons Bureau.
The Unclaimed Baggage Department.
If you find me, let me know where I am. I'm lost. MichaelCutler.net is my website. My radio show is the Michael Cutler Hour on Blog Talk Radio Friday nights. I write for Front Page Magazine. I've taken a slight respite from writing. I'm going to get back to it this week. I've been so overwhelmed by everything coming at us from so many directions, but we really have to understand we can disagree about all the other issues, folks, if there's one issue that we should all and must all be united on, it's immigration. Because if we can't prevent the invasion of America, America has no future. And that's not a statement of xenophobia. It's a statement of reality. A country's borders are its first and last line of defense, all of its borders. And by the way, if you're going to throw a party and run out of resources, you don't fight more people. America is a country of finite resources. I'm not suggesting shutting down immigration, only that the immigration system serve the best interests, not of America, but of we, the people, the Americans. That's the issue on all of these issues. And please remember, democracy is not a spectator sport. Get involved. Have those conversations. I really believe that we can unite as Americans, ignore the nonsense that might divide us, and focus on what makes us most similar.
And that's all the time we've got. Michael, I apologize for the technical issues we went through, but as always, you make it worth the wait. And I want to thank you once again for being with us. You're always so generous with your time. Thank you for that. Thank you for your friendship, and I know we'll be talking to you really soon. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Michael Cutler. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you so much. Be well. Stay safe.
Okay, that's it. That's all the time we got, man. 3, 2, 1, bye.